Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Spark.
We tell true stories.
We tell them live.
And we tell them all across the UK.
Today, you'll hear two stories of culture shock
from our open mic night in Brixton.
In August 2015.
The first is by Ruth Hunt.
I worked 10 years ago in China for a year. And I, until that point, had never been out of Europe before. It was only my third time on a plane. And I'd signed up for a year's contract in Beijing, not speaking a word of Chinese, not really being able to point to China on a map, if I'm totally honest. I had no idea where I was going or what was I like, set up for. But I got this job at a university teaching English, which thankfully I was qualified for. And they provided a flat, so they gave me flights, picked me up from the airport, and they left me at my flat on the compound in the university. On the flight over, which was quite long, the longest flight I'd ever done, I'd read frantically through my like Chinese for Beginners book and What to Expect in Beijing book, but really nothing prepared me for stepping outside of my front door. Everything was covered in red sand because there'd been a sandstorm the night before, so I'm in a grey tower block in a massive city with smog covering the sun, walking through sand, which was quite strange when there's no beach. And I stepped outside my apartment and I thought, something's slightly strange. I mean, I'm expecting exotic, foreign, exciting, I don't know what, but something. And there are lots of people wearing pyjamas. And I don't mean that as a kind of culturally insensitive me thinking that their mouth suits pyjamas. Actual BHS-style Christmas pyjamas with teddy bears, stars, you know, kind of the whole works with slippers in the street. And they're all walking around as if this is totally normal, casual wear. And I just kind of walked down the street. I later find out that that was at the time fashionable English wear. And so because it was expensive, because it was English wear, they didn't want to wear it in bed. They wanted to show off that they had these things. So everyone just went to shops wearing their full pyjamas, which now Lidl and Aldi, probably you find people in their onesies here and that's fine. But 10 years ago, that wasn't the case in England. So I'm walking with down the sort of this slightly zombified street with lots of people wearing pyjamas and some of them even carrying the teddy bears that came with the matching set. And I need some food, so I think, okay, I'll go to a vegetable store. There's one in the compound. It's just built of kind of bricks and a bit of hardboard, loads of vegetables. No idea what the vegetables are. Don't have any vocabulary to ask for any of these things, even if I didn't know what they were. But I know the word for one, and I know the word for the weight measurement of about 100 grams of gin. So I know that one gin of that will get me something. And so I look at the stall. There's nothing really that I know what it is. So I point at some things and think, well, it's vegetables. How much damage can it do me? And she says the words for the vegetables and I can't repeat any of them. I can't even hear the kind of distinct syllables. And then we get to a vegetable that I know it's potatoes. I'm like, oh, thank goodness, there's potatoes. This is good. And she says the word potato. And I think, oh, I've actually got this. There's two syllables. I can get this word. I try and repeat back the word she said to me, potato. And at this point, I notice that there are people starting to come up behind me. And she says, oh, you know, sort of motions at me to say it again. And I say it again. And if I translate from the Chinese for you, what she said was, ah, no. And she found great hilarity in the fact that I couldn't say the word potato, tudo, if you're interested, which probably that's not the correct pronunciation either. But there were loads of people around me because the people on my compound had never seen a Westerner before. And they were watching me buy potatoes and found my pronunciation hysterical. So I had arrived the day before, People wearing pyjamas are surrounding me on a street. About 30 of them are watching me buy my groceries and laughing at everything that I do and say. And they ask me where I'm from. And I don't understand those words, but I hear the word, "You're American," because I've learned the word American in my guide. And I say, "Oh, no, I'm not American." And what I think I say is, "I'm English." Slight problem with my tones and pronunciation. What I've actually declared to this group of people who are laughing at me buying my potatoes is that I am music, at which point there's more laughter. But I have potatoes and I've learned about fashion choices, so, you know, I'm having a good day. And every day I go back to this stall and people still come and laugh at me. But the lady every day says, "Do you want potatoes?" And I say, "Okay." And I have a lot of potatoes in that year. About 6 months into my year stint, I go to the stall and there's a bulldozer and there's some rubble next door. And they're doing the clearances for the Olympics and they're just clearing all of the slums and all of the vegetable sellers who are there illegally, who don't have permits, who don't have residence permits. So they're just basically illegals from the countryside who can be sent back to wherever. And they're demolishing my potato stall. And I just give all the money I have in my purse to this lady because I know she has no permit. She's not entitled to be there. She could be put in prison. She's just got to go. So I give her, you know, whatever I have in my wallet, which is probably about £20, which to me was, you know, not too much, but for her about a week and a half's wages. And I thought, it's all I can do. And then she just goes. And because I can't really speak Chinese and I can't write Chinese, I don't know where she goes or what she does. About a month later, I'm going on a bus and I hear this shout through the crowd, "Music, potato, music, potato." And she's in one of the stalls as I'm getting on the bus, and she's in one of the mobile phone stalls, and she's obviously got a new business. She's now a mobile phone seller rather than a potato seller. But I'm just really grateful for potatoes, because potatoes helped me to get into Chinese life.
That was Ruth Hunt.
Our second story this week is by Roisin Murphy.
So I'm Irish, and I've been living in the UK for about 6 years or so now. And kind of on a similar theme to, I think, what other people, expats, have said about being in London, is about being here and then going back home and kind of experiencing something that shocks you for the first time. You feel like you're very from that country, and then you go back and you realise you kind of have never experienced that before. So a couple of years ago, I was working, with the lovely Nicole. And my grandmother got very sick, and she was very old. She was in her 90s at this stage, as my dad's mom. And for me, I don't find death very upsetting for old people because, you know, they've lived their life and they've usually lived a very long one. And it's been very wholesome. And I kind of feel like, well, a lot of them, I feel, know when it's come to be their time. So for her, I knew she was getting sick, but I had taken a lot of holiday for different reasons that year. So I wasn't quite sure if I could ask for the time off or what. And it happened to be bank holiday weekend. So I decided, my dad told me basically, you know, she's coming to her end. So maybe you should think about coming home. So I decided that my holiday Monday, I would go home for just one day. I would go over in the morning, come back in the evening. So I left that morning and I reached Cork, and my dad's family is very traditionally Irish, more so than I was brought up at all. But they live, you know, like on a hill in the countryside. It's very religious, much to my dad's dismay. And she was being cared for at home by my aunt and uncle. So I went to the house and I'd never seen anything like it before. I'd never had a person close to me die before. So she's literally sitting in a bed, the smallest, tiniest thing I'd ever seen. And not able to breathe properly. I don't know if you've experienced it before, but it's very unusual to see somebody that close to death. And then I was there, and it was quite upset, but they were silent. You know, she was old, so people were very respectful. And I think a lot of people, Irish people, have been around death a lot because people are not afraid to kind of just face it. So then I said my goodbyes and I went to my aunt and uncle's house, basically waiting for my flight to go home that evening. And then I think within about 2 hours of getting to my aunt and uncle's house, they got the phone call saying she'd passed away. So within this 12-hour period that I happened to be in Ireland, she passed away. So I went back to my aunt and uncle's house and everybody was much more upset, even though everyone had already come to terms with it. So I came to the house and it was that thing of people turn around to you and they say to you, you know, she just knew, you know, and then you kind of go, did I kill her off? So she saw me, and then because she knew, then she passed away. But we were all very upset, and we were all told basically, now this is when you go into the room. So then you're going to the room with a person who has literally just died. And I had, like, being an Irish family, even though we're very upfront with the death and things, and we're not English, we're still very, we don't talk about our, like, you know, we don't talk about emotions very much, but you're in a room full of people who are very close to you, all bawling their eyes out, very expressive emotionally. And the first thing that strikes me is I look at my grandmother, and the most hilarious sight, which is, sounds terrible to say, but in order to keep her jaw together, they'd put like a toilet roll, just like a roll of toilet paper under her chin. And it was just you wouldn't laugh, but it was just one of these bizarre like experiences. You can't laugh. It's very not appropriate. So just like standing around this old woman with the toilet paper tied around her head, and everyone is there very upset. And they just start saying the Hail Mary. And this is apparently a thing you do. I'm not religious at all, but my family are. And everyone just saying Hail Mary over and over again. And not being not religious, I usually wouldn't believe in this. I would just be, you know, I kind of stay quiet or something. But actually, there was something about saying it over and over again, just the same thing. It's something about just doing something together with a lot of people in one room that has a very cathartic effect on you. So saying it and just, it kind of built in power as you said it more and more. It's a very, very powerful experience. And I just remember thinking, standing there, that this was one of the most real things I'd ever done in my life. That it was like, there was a dead person right there. I had just seen her in her waking moments, and she'd passed away. So then the following year, my grandfather was, he'd been quite ill. He'd been into hospital. And I remember going visiting him in hospital with my brother. And I think he was both my grandparents very with it right to the end. And he told us some stories about, oh, maybe I'll go hiking up the mountains, you know, someday. And we knew he was just, you know, being very wistful about things. And he passed away kind of about Christmas time. And we had his wake. And this was where, I hadn't been there for my grandmother's wake. I had to go back to England. But my grandfather's wake, you're sitting in a room literally with the dead body in a coffin for a very extended period of time, shaking hands with every single person that you know in your life ever. Like all of your neighbors, all the people you thought you'd forgotten about a long time ago, they're all there shaking hands with you. And again, it's this thing of, you know, you repeat things, you say, and it just, something about it helps you get over it. You kind of confront it. You can't hide away from it. The Friday just before last, a very close friend of mine passed away. And it was very shocking because he was a very young person. But the Irish people were there within 12 hours or so. And they all came over. And it was this influx of support because it's that thing of Irish people, they're not afraid. Like, they're not afraid to be there. They know when they need to be there. They're not afraid to show support. And we were there, you know, all of a sudden, all these people in my kitchen, like, making jokes, laughing. We weren't really able to see him because he was too ill at the time before he passed away. But, you know, everyone was there to kind of share the experience together and just confront it together. And after having experienced those two experiences with both of my grandparents and being very kind of afraid and being so shocked the first time that I'd been confronted with this, having gone through that and understood what it's like to be Irish people, and we're not afraid of it, we're just confronting it head on, I feel like what had started out for me as such a culture shock a couple of years ago ended up helping me through one of probably the most difficult times I've been through recently. Thank you.
On Thursday, the 24th of September,
Spark London is hosting A Night of Stories
with HIV charity Body and Soul.
Full details at stories.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mm-hmm.